Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 17th September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, and myself, Brian Gerrish.
Well, we're going to start off with war, Brian. And Peter Hitchens again for the second weekend in a row in his Sunday blog Sunday Mail. This time he's saying we're on the brink of war and nobody has noticed. He said it looks very much like it. Will it be justified? I don't think so. Can we stop it? It's worth a try. Almost everyone missed an amazing and worrying moment in Parliament last week when Foreign Office Minister Alistair Burt gave us a glimpse of the government's thinking. Well, you didn't miss it if you were watching this programme because we showed that video clip. They will go to war without waiting for the facts to be checked and without recalling Parliament, Hitchens says. In a very brief debate about the war in Syria, he was asked about plans now being openly discussed at high level in Washington for a devastating attack on Damascus. This will be in response to a supposed atrocity as yet to take place, but about which the Americans openly say they have evidence, probably an alleged poison gas attack, in which we will see heartbreaking but unverified film of dead or dying children from propaganda sources and claims of multiple deaths from untraceable eyewitnesses. In my view, these claims are very similar to the claims of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, used to bamboozle the British and American people into that catastrophic war, and also the claims of mass rape and massacre, equally unproven, which were the excuse for David Cameron's disastrous attack on Libya. I do recommend people read on through that. Now, in the meantime, various press reports of NATO warships moving closer to the Syrian coast. So this, of course, brings them into proximity with Russian warships that are in the area. And then we've got this going on today because the Russian Minister of Defence has been holding a press conference this morning all about Malaysian Airlines, the Boeing 777, which was allegedly shot down, well, the West says, by the Russians over Ukraine and so on. So 4 years ago, Malaysian Airlines flying from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, if you remember, crashed near Donetsk, 298 passengers and crew killed. And the Russians saying, quotes, we have an audio recording of telephone conversations of Ukrainian servicemen made in 2016. An analysis of its contents confirms earlier made conclusions about the direct involvement of the Ukrainian side in the crash of the Malaysian Boeing. They said that the voice on the audio recording belongs to Ukrainian Armed Forces Colonel Ruslan Grinchak. And so it goes on. But in the meantime then, and perhaps in response, the president of Ukraine has signed an order, according to Sputnik here, to dissolve the so-called Treaty of Friendship with Russia. So Poroshenko has executed a decision endorsed by the National Security and Defense Council to scrap the Russian-Ukrainian Friendship Treaty, his administration's press service said today in a statement. So we can see that on two fronts, things beginning to ramp up here, Brian. But in the meantime then, in Maria Zakharova's briefing, her weekly briefing at the end of last week, she was talking about Idlib, of course, because this is going to be the sort of first problem. These fighters, the so-called moderate rebels in Idlib, are proactively centralizing their command and are preparing to defend their positions for a long period of time while getting rid of opposition group leaders inclined to accept reconciliation. So I thought that was quite an interesting statement from her because, of course, last week we reported the comments of Karen Pearce, the UK's representative to the UN Security Council. She was speaking in the UN Security Council asking for time to allow Turkey and the opposition groups the support, space and time to separate out the terrorists and tackle them themselves. Well, that doesn't seem to be happening. Instead, we're getting centralised control. And in fact, the terrorists are dealing with any of the so-called moderates that aren't willing to fight with the terrorists. So I've put this through. There are many translation apps on the website. So I've put this through one of the most popular. And in fact, what Karen Pearce was saying was, well, we allow opposition groups the support, space and time to get themselves organised with the full support of British boots on the ground. So that's what I believe she was actually saying last week. But anyway, getting back to Zakharova then, in her briefing, she was talking about the Russian military also reporting a rising number of shell attacks by terrorists against communities in areas controlled by the government. And of course, this is something that Vanessa Bailey has been reporting consistently during her time, at any time that she's been in Syria, that shells coming from the terrorist held areas into civilian areas. And this is all happening with no comment from the British government, when in fact the British government focuses on the Syrian army trying to get rid of these terrorists in the first place. She said at the same time, the so-called international coalition led by the US has shared military exercises in eastern Syria using the Al-Tanf military base. And let me remind you that it has no right to be present in Syria. The purpose of these exercises is to practice moving and deploying rapid response forces, as well as attacking terrorists from the air, as well as from the ground. So, she's concerned about what's going on in Syria, concerned about the potential for conflict between Russia, the US, Britain. And I saw some reports today of French troops in the Deir ez-Zor area as well, and many people asking what they're doing there. So the situation ramping up, and I think Hitchens absolutely right to be focusing on it, Brian.
Well, he is right, and it's just remarkable, Mike, that he seems to be the only person prepared to put his head above the parapet and report on this stuff. But just come back to this business of troops on the ground. We were repeatedly told by David Cameron that there would not be British troops, the boots of British troops, put on the ground in Syria, and yet it's quite clear that British troops, special forces, have been operating on the ground in Syria for years. The same with American special forces. And we have American base, and this significant air base in Syria, operating on the soil of a sovereign national nation. No requests. The Syrians don't want them there. The Americans say, well, tough, you have to have us in order to get the terrorists out. But what the Americans are doing with the British at the moment is supporting these terrorist interests. There's no question of this. And as Hitchin says, we're lining up for World War III as if it isn't happening. Maybe part of the reason for that is that our MPs are unable to function. And we'll come on to that a little bit later.
Well, a number of times in the last couple of weeks, we've mentioned Theresa May's rapid response mechanism. This is supposed to be a common narrative between all the G7 nations. And so perhaps this is a little bit unfortunate. Well, this is a Dutch publication, obviously, and people will not be able to necessarily read that headline. So as if by magic, let's turn that into English. The Netherlands is stopping support for Syrian opposition due to inadequate supervision of aid projects. British organisation denies criticism. And what they're saying here is that the heaviest criticism is focused on the White Helmets, the internationally celebrated rescue workers who pluck people out of rubble after bombing and shelling in the rebel areas. According to their comments, more than 250 emergency workers have since been killed during this work. They've been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize and so on. But this is the point, the Dutch government complaining that there is not enough sort of oversight of what these people are doing. And in fact, this matches very much, Brian, with my experience of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office with regard to the White Helmets, because aside from the Freedom of Information request that I put in regarding Andy Price, the head of counter disinformation at the Foreign Office, I've got a second Freedom of Information request. Well, this is in fact the third, because the second Freedom of Information request originally was asking for the quarterly financial statements that the White Helmets are supposed to return to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, but which the Foreign and Commonwealth Office do not want to share. They don't want to share that information with anybody. So they refused that Freedom of Information request. So I took a slightly different tack. And I asked a specific question about the oversight of White Helmets activity. They responded when I put that in. I think that was in July I put that request in. They responded, acknowledging receipt. And that's the last I've heard. I've now prompted them several times because they're now about 20 days late with this response. And at this point, they are not responding to me at all. They're not even acknowledging receipt of the prompts. So this is clearly an extremely sensitive issue for the British government. I'm fascinated that the Dutch government is now breaking with the British government and saying that they don't like this organisation, they don't like the oversight of this organisation. in light of the rapid response mechanism, this can't be going too down too well with Theresa May.
No, somebody said in our chat box that the Volkskrant, the paper there, is a quality Dutch newspaper, right of centre. And so this is a particularly interesting report. Mm. But this has gone on from the outset, Mike, that we have been supporting not rebels, not opposition, because quite clearly Britain has been supporting terrorists. Just bring this one back on screen. This was a tweet from the 26th of August 2013 by then Conservative MP Brooks Newmark. Busy day meeting Syrian opposition, including General Idris and President Saba. Assad's 14th chemical weapons attack, tipping point in the civil war. So we were raising questions then as to why Brooks Newmark was meeting General Idris and why Brooks Newmark was happy to say in the Daily Mail that General Idris's Free Syrian Army was linked through to al-Nusra fighters. And of course, we now see everywhere that al-Nusra fighters are in fact terrorists. Mm. So no explanations ever given. And of course, no evidence has come out of the UN or Britain or America or France or the EU to support evidence of Assad's forces carrying out those chemical incidents. Mm. So where the 14th comes from, I have no idea. But this is the sort of information coming out of the Cameron Conservative government.
Okay, yeah. Sputnik reporting this today. Russian specialists studying documents on US laboratory in Georgia. This is the Russian MOD. Early reports stated that a number of countries, including Russia, suspected that a laboratory in the Georgian capital may harbor a secret military biological weapons program run by the US military and private contractors. Russia's Ministry of Defense has analyzed documents connected to the US military's biological program released by the former Georgian cabinet minister Igor Georgiadze. The results are slated to be published in due time. According to the ministry, the documents contain some signs pointing to serious violations of the International Convention Against Bioweaponry. The Lugar Center was opened in 2011 and has received the attention of both journalists and intelligence agencies, including Russia's FSB, which suspects that the lab has been involved in bioweapons research. Dilyana Gundyeva, a Bulgarian investigative journalist who has written extensively on the Pentagon's alleged secret bioweapons program, believes the Lugar Center is a component of the program. Now, Dilyana was speaking at the last Alternative View conference in May. Absolutely fantastic independent journalist and does superb work. And in fact, if you want to find out more, including many of the documents that are being talked about here, head over to 21st Century Wire. And the headline there is WMD America Inside the Pentagon's Global Bioweapons Industry. And that is quite a long article, well sourced, and plenty of documents for people to look at there. Yeah. But Dilyana doing fantastic work, and she needs to be a bit more in the public eye, Brian.
Very, very much so. That was an incredible talk that she gave, and what she was showing, which appeared to be the US running biological research facilities right up on the Russian border. Some of it was difficult to believe. Do I believe it? Absolutely, because of the depth of the research, but incredibly nasty stuff happening right on the Russian border.
Okay, well, yesterday, Novichok 2 continues, and this time it's not Novichok, say police, according to the Mail. Russian couple, Russian inverted commas couple, fall ill at Salisbury restaurant with nerve agent symptoms, sparking panic as police in hazmat suits keep terrified diners in isolation for hours before giving the all clear. What was this, a psychological operation? I think that's exactly what it was. There was clearly nothing to see here. A couple of people with a bit of food poisoning or something, I don't know. But anyway, the Mail nonetheless gives a helpful satellite picture showing where the new restaurant is relative to the restaurant that the Skripals attended, 300 metres away, apparently. And they give some nice photographs of people in what? I don't think that could really be described as a hazmat suit, or could it?
Well, no, because we've got lots of bare skin there, Mike. What this is, I don't know. It it just gets more and more bizarre. And if you mix people who've supposedly been in to investigate, you've got some form of hazardous material, you can't have them chatting with somebody who's not protected. So at each stage of this investigation, whether it's the Skripals or whether it was the other poisoning incident, the British government's response to a chemical agency has been utterly bizarre.
Right, well, it gets better. It gets better because here we go. Project Minerva, there you are, it's on screen. The UK has tested life-saving chemical detection robots and drones. Apparently, a new fleet of robots and drones designed to test for chemical agents, provide 3D mapping and identify casualties has been put through their paces by troops, police officers and scientists for the first time. Tests of the cutting-edge multi-million pound project, co-funded by the Ministry of Defence and the Home Office, included robots that can read and climb stairs, and miniature drones weighing less than a bar of soap, which could soon come in, into service to rapidly assess hazardous scenes. I'm really struggling to keep my face straight with this. But anyway, the aim of the groundbreaking research, named Project Minerva, is to reduce the risk to emergency services and frontline troops attending incidents on operations involving hazardous chemical or biological materials. The recent trials, which took place at Gloucestershire Fire Service College, saw concept drones and robots thrown into simulated contaminated scenarios in both UK homeland and battlefield environments. The technology was tested against the speed and accuracy of human response teams, supported by specialist DSTL scientists and military police and fire services. Project Minerva was launched in September 2016, the project intends to bring the designs from concept to reality in an accelerated time frame. The recent trials involved the winning concepts for phase two of the project, so this is fantastic. Secretary of State for War, Gav the Chav, had this to say. Following the reckless nerve agent attack in Salisbury this year, we've seen the bravery and professionalism of our armed forces, emergency services and MOD scientists. They've worked tirelessly to investigate and clean up deadly contaminated areas. This project will ensure we stay at the forefront of dealing with such heinous attacks, either on our streets or foreign battlefields. We're investing millions in this pioneering technology to do more to protect those who fearlessly protect us. So £48 million worth of investment in the new Chemical Weapons Defence Centre at DSTL. And so my question, Brian, is what does £48 million of baby wipes look like? Because, of course, this is still the advice from Public Health England that if you get contaminated by Novichok, simply wipe your mobile phones or other items with baby wipes. So really, this clearly is the core of the technology. These are baby wipe delivery drones. I'm just wondering what £48 million of baby wipes looks like.
Well, it's probably quite heavy, I would have thought, Mike, but I just get an image of one of those little drones coming in and sniffing around, and then it decides that there's some form of chemical biological agent, and it can drop a baby wipe package. It's sort of like an Amazon delivery. But of course, these are concept, aren't they? These are concept vehicles. So this is fake news, because this is something that could happen, but it's being presented as if it's a bona fide government reaction to the theatre that we're seeing unfold in Salisbury.
Absolutely.
Well, are our politicians thinking correctly? We haven't thought they were for some years, but I think the evidence that that statement's true is growing. Let's have a look at the Express here. And a really excellent headline: MPs take mindfulness course to tackle depression in Parliament. I had to do something. It says dozens of stressed out MPs and peers have taken part in a mindfulness course to tackle depression. 185 parliamentarians have taken up specialised classes on the parliamentary estate aimed at helping improve work-life balance to deal with anxiety problems. So I wonder whether Boris has had to do a bit of mindfulness in order to cope with the stress of dealing with his little bit of floozy. In my day, it would be called Totty, of course, but the young lady has put a lot of stress. I should think that he'll be one of the people taking the course.
Where's the stress coming from, Brian? Is this what happens when you require MPs to do something which they know is unconscionable?
Well, I think the stress has come from the fact that they know they should be doing a proper job to serve their constituents. They're not. They're having late night drinking sessions. They're doing a little bit of sex. They're having a little bit of drugs, probably in the toilets, has been reported in British mainstream press. And then, of course, they get a little bit of a guilt complex. You've got the pressure of the whips. Some of them have been playing around with young boys, so the whips are obviously putting the pressure on them to toe the line to go to war in Syria. And this is the mix for breakdown. So the stress is coming in there, and some devious people are now offering them mindfulness, which we'll come on to. These are some of the comments in the article. Of course, they're all anonymous. I knew I had to do something about stress and work-life balance. Mindfulness never crossed my mind till I discovered the course, and it's working for me. This is a quote from an MP, apparently. I even managed to sleep well that night. That's another MP speaking. The course empowered me to reframe my life from insurmountable pressures and problems to tackling issues in proportion and finding an inner calm, restoring quality to every day. So you've got an MP who should be worried about the fact the country's being taken to war, that we're about to kill tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people overseas. But they're not going to worry about that because they've been reframed to bring in that inner calm. Yeah, we are going to kill a few hundred thousand people in Syria, but I feel quite calm about it. I can sleep well.
Good.
I'm not joking here. Let's get into this because the UK column has always warned that this stuff is immensely dangerous. This is the Mindfulness Initiative, the Mindfulness All-Party Parliamentary Group. It was stated in 2014 with the purpose to review research evidence, current best practice, extent and success of implementation and potential developments in the application of mindfulness within a range of policy areas and to develop policy recommendations for government based on these findings. So this is about bringing mindfulness in to be used as applied behavioural psychology on the general public. But what's happening now is that the MPs themselves are being drawn into it. And this is very, very dangerous stuff. So we've got the co-chairs, Tim Lawton MP. He's MP for East Worthing and Shoreham, member of the Home Affairs Select Committee, Under Secretary of State for Children and Families. I don't get a warm feeling about that. And Chris Roon, MP, Member of Parliament for the Vale of Clwyd and Shadow Minister Wales. He was deputy head in a large primary school. So we got children, family, school type expertise in these people. But now there's a whole raft of them involved. So we've got a secretary, Lord Alan Howarth of Newport, Lord Andrew Stone of Blackheath. On they go. I haven't had time to look at these MPs in detail, but we'll certainly be doing this. But let's have a look at what they say in their own words. Is it for everyone? Mindfulness best considered inherent human capacity akin to language acquisition, a capacity that enables people to focus on what they experience in the moment, inside themselves as well as their environment, with an attitude of openness, curiosity and care. We are all somewhat mindful some of the time, but we can choose to cultivate this faculty and refine it to ever greater degrees through mindfulness practice. Aren't they supposed to be MPs doing a job to help run the country and to protect people and to run the NHS? And here we're finding out that they're worried about their own mental health. But this is the really dynamite bit. Let's bring this in. On occasions, participants in meditation groups or retreats report unusual or unexpected experiences. This can prompt a variety of reactions from curiosity at one end of the scale to concern or distress at the other. Further research is needed to better understand the origin and frequency of such experiences. So you can play around with this mindfulness in Westminster, and you can actually experience effects which are immensely distressing. What sort of effects? Well, we had a school teacher contact us many years ago after they played around with this material at her school. And some of the school teachers following the mindfulness training had nightmares which were so horrific they were still disturbed the next day. And those school teachers were particularly disturbed as how this was going to be used on young children. What are we seeing here? These techniques now being used on politicians. So we've got reframing, we've got brainwashing, dangerous brainwashing of MPs who at the moment seem to be taking us to war. It's madness. Now, just to recap very quickly, we were picking up on this back in 2015. Here was the Mail pushing out celebrity Emma Watson. What we said is the Mail failed to do any proper research and report on the dangers of this. They simply pumped it out as being a good thing. Where's it stem from? Oxford, the Mindfulness Centre, and backed by the Wellcome Trust. We pointed out the NHS was using it. We also pointed out that anybody could set themselves up as a psychotherapist using this and completely unaware or don't care about the dangers. So who's the Wellcome Trust? Leave you to have a look at it, but just under £1 billion to play around with. And where's it come in? From very powerful people, BP, we've got bankers, we've got, who's this one? Max Planck Institute of Neurobiology. I don't get a warm feeling about any of these people. What we say to our audience, check them yourself. And then we bring in ex-MI5 people working with Wellcome Trust to help give us this trustworthy mindfulness training. So Schroeder's Bank, well, it's all here, isn't it? Reinsurance. We've warned about this, but now we can see that our politicians are also succumbing.
I think it's, Brian, important to say once again, of course, mindfulness has come out of Buddhism, but even the Buddhist establishment has been warning over the last number of years about the sort of
politicization is an easy thing to say.
But also they're saying that this is what's being presented here is secular mindfulness. There's no spiritual grounding in it as far as they're concerned.
Yep.
Therefore, in their opinion, it's dangerous. So they have been expressing concern about it as well for any of our viewers and listeners that are Buddhists and say, but this is something which is part of what we do. This is not the same thing at all.
No, absolutely true. There's a debate to be had about NLP as well, and we're going to keep pushing this immensely dangerous, particularly when people don't understand what the risks are. Is the BBC going to report on it? Well, I don't think so. The BBC, Mike, seems to have dropped to really bottom level now with its news reports. I did a quick scan today to see what some of the other news was the BBC was talking about. And here we've got them picking up on this journalist whose name is Dae-in Yoon, an artist. And here she is, Illusions Challenging the Notions of Self. And what this woman is doing is painting her own body. So this is her sort of artwork. Some of it is pretty gross. It's a lot, often eyes, but the overall effect is very disturbing when you look at it. She says, some people just walk away from me. When you look at the video clip, this is one of the things she says about herself. I watch lots of horror films and read scary comic books. And the BBC is pushing this forward as a role model. There's no doubt about this. So what is this doing for children? Well, you're saying watch horror films, and then you're beginning to question yourself. Now, we could have a long discussion about this. We're going to say, as far as the news is concerned, this can easily take you towards mental breakdown. Is this just an accident from the BBC? Well, I don't think so, because this is an earlier article that they had. Creepy art, a woman adorning her body with all sorts of unpleasant insects. And in this case, she's got maggots, which she's using as her eyelashes. So the BBC is absolutely into this stuff. I believe that this is a very vicious attack on the minds of young people. It's certainly not by accident. It doesn't have to be that style, because we've got another major article from the BBC here. And apparently this young man was taken on by L'Oreal to help promote their cosmetics. But it's Gary, also known as the Plastic Boy. And he's very big because I think he's got 75,000 people following him. So this is major news from the BBC, but it doesn't get any better because here we get into the fact that we've got a major article for the BBC on whether they might shut down Nevada's brothels. That's clearly very important as we go to war, Mike, as I think you can understand. And if you notice, just to the right of that, we've got an interesting little headline there, why it's okay to have bad manners. Now, there's nothing confusing in that headline. It's very specific, why it's okay to have bad manners. I was intrigued by that, so we went to have a look at the article, and here it is. And the BBC has commissioned the lady who's written this article. In fact, she doesn't say that it's okay to have bad manners. She rather throws people's minds into a no man's land. So she said there's a clear need to be considerate of others and to conform to social rules, particularly when their behaviour is a risk to others. But deciding what is acceptable can also mean making a judgment about what we should prioritise when it comes to happily coexisting. Should it be the preference of those who want their experiences of travel, dining and art to be free from annoying disturbances, or the rights of those with noisy young children, disabilities, or simply a different set of values? For most of us, encountering moments of bad behaviour is a fleeting problem. Maybe the most considerate thing we can do is try not to be so quick to judge.
This is something straight out of the Nudge Unit, Brian.
Well, I put in this little caption, BBC fake news and mind manipulation, because the woman is playing with your mind by taking you into this area where shouldn't you do it? This is very, very dangerous stuff. But the BBC then puts a completely false headline over it anyway by saying it's OK to have bad manners, which the journalist didn't say as a single point statement anyway. So who is she? Well, she's a lecturer, Bristol University, and she lectures on the behaviour of theatre audiences. In fact, she's just got another tranche of money to study the way audiences.
So it's more behavioural research.
Behavioural research. So I thought, how interesting that the BBC has paid this woman money to write that article. Let's go and have a look at her. We go to her Twitter page. What she's doing is promoting her book.
Oh, behaviour policing, is it?
Yeah. So the BBC has paid her, but ultimately in giving her publicity, what the BBC is doing is promoting her book. What sort of woman is she? Well, I just got a little bit of an impression by this embedded video tweet, which I'll just play. I found it offensive. Oh. She says she's playing devil's advocate. But why do you need to have something like this on your Twitter page?
For our listeners, it's a cartoon of a woman
kicking a man's head off.
Right.
That's what she's doing.
Not pleasant.
So there we are. I think the comment from UK column is that the BBC really is now at a point where it's dangerous, particularly to young people in this country. My personal opinion is the BBC should be shut down. But is the BBC going to tell us the truth in Syria or elsewhere? I don't think so.
Well, in the meantime, financial collapse looms and another voice added to the mix. This is Giulio Sapelli, and he was speaking to Euronews yesterday, Italian economist, of course, warning the financial system is in a worse state than it was in 2008. We're 10 years on from the collapse of Lehman Brothers, of course, and he's calling for full bank separation. Now, there's been quite a bit on the BBC, actually, recently in the last few days, about the 10th anniversary of Lehman Brothers and discussion about whether the protections that are allegedly in place to deal with a future economic or financial collapse are sufficient. But what Sapelli is saying is the lesson to be drawn today is that self-regulation and good governance in the company, as well as in the state, is the rule to avoid crises, together with separation between investment and commercial banks, with the termination of universal banks, period. He said today, we have several trillions of derivatives. The capitalization is dozens of times higher than the world GDP, and therefore collateralization, what Sir Mervyn King characterises a marvellous alchemy by which banks, not central banks, but any bank or financial operator creates money has never ended. But what kind of money is it? It's the over-the-counter, it's the derivative, it's the instrument of mass destruction, which makes it possible to write a debt as an asset because you sell the debt through collateralization and financial leverage. Therefore, it is much worse today than when Lehman Brothers failed, including because I do not think that a massive central bank intervention could avoid, as in the past, a collapse because governments had to intervene. And it seems to me that all states are enormously weak, especially when the USA is so divided. What would happen in such a state, so split among the deep state, the president and the old pro-financial oligarchy and the Republican side, which has destroyed America, the Clintons, the Obamas and the Bushes, it would be the end. So I don't think he's exaggerating things here. And, you know, in the BBC's coverage, they had people on from Positive Money, for example, talking about how great it was that regulation of the financial system was back in the hands of the Bank of England, how great it was that we've got ring fencing. Well, in fact, the original ring fencing idea, which was already a significantly watered down version of Glass-Steagall, it has been watered down over the years and still hasn't actually been implemented. So ring fencing, despite what some people say, is not actually in place at this point in time. You know, I have just got to say this has been one of our comments for the last, 10 years, really, that we need full separation of investment and commercial banking. We need to remove the stranglehold that the banks have on us. Because there is a crash coming. It's inevitable. The situation is, as this gentleman is saying, 10 times worse than it was 10 years ago, 100 times worse. Unless we deal with it, we're going to be killed by it.
Okay. Well, let's take an area of public services that is always saying they can't operate properly due to lack of money, and that's policing. And a very interesting tweet that was picked up here is Police Scotland, and they're tweeting out today, we will be welcoming delegates from the foreign law enforcement community to Police Scotland College for a conference to share and discuss strategies and help plan for future partnership working. So if we start to ask this key question, well, who is it that decides what the policy of the police is? Of course, in Scotland, there's been a huge push by Scottish Police or Police Scotland to be armed. Many, many people in Scotland don't like this idea, but the policy is still being pushed. Where is policing policy coming from? We took a little bit of a look into see what we could find about this. So we've got the College of Policing here. Now, something I didn't check is whether there is one central College of Policing and there's a or whether there's a different one for Scotland. We'll check up on that. But nevertheless, we can have a look at here at what's being said and get an impression. So we've got the College of Policing. We've got a guideline committee and it says the College of Policing is piloting a new approach to the development of guidance as set out in the College of Policing business plan. Now, I found that significant, Mike, because you think you're dealing with the civil service or civil servants in particular with the police, but no, we're into the language of business plans. And if we're running a business plan, then we must be looking at profit. Mm. So we get an idea there of where the policy is coming in. Now, what do they talk about in one of the sections? Well, the contents there on the left give us a lot of it, but they are very, very big on integration with the European Union. So there's a whole paragraph here on Europol. We've also got a piece on the Europol information system. This is the huge database at Europol's HQ in the Hague. And we are still contributing to it. None of this is discussed in Brexit at all, of course, Mike. We're simply building up the policing partnership. And I was just intrigued to find that, of course, linked in with this is the National Crime Agency, which acts as the European National Unit within the College of Policing. So the liaison unit for the European Union, effectively, is the National Crime Agency. But don't worry, we've got Brexit occurring shortly. So if you go to the National Crime Agency, this is what they have to say about them, that organise themselves. Organised crime is one of the greatest threats to UK national security. Our role is to protect the public by disrupting and bringing to justice these serious and organised criminals who present the highest risk to the UK. I thought it would be interesting to have a look and see what they did for risks to children. And what you then find is that that is delegated to CEOP. So this was a little embedded video for child protection from the unit which calls itself CEOP, Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command. But when you press that link, it didn't actually work. Now, that might have been a problem for me, or possibly that link's down, but I don't know why. But what is significant is while you can see them talking about all of their drug busts and millions of pounds weight of drugs seized, you can't find any real evidence at all about them doing anything to protect children. It's like that part of organised crime doesn't exist. Instead, you're back to these very childish cartoons, as if a child is going to go on the National Crime Agency page and make contact with them. So if any of our viewers and listeners can do a little bit of research and see whether we've missed something, and in fact, there are some good case studies of the good work National Crime Agency has done on child exploitation, please let us know and we'll be very happy to report that. But what we can tell you today is that in the background, of course, we've got a very big independent organisation helping policing, and that's the RAND Corporation. What do they say? Their clients include Europol, the European Commission, the UK Home Office and the College of Policing. RAND Europe undertakes research into international, European and national law enforcement. So we can't police ourselves. We need the RAND Corporation to help us. It's got to help the Home Office as well, because obviously our politicians are too stressed and they're busy being reframed. Have a little look into RAND Corporation. And what do you find? Well, you find that they have massive, massive funding, predominantly coming from the US government. So we've got $318 million here. We've got 66 million coming from the US Department of Health. We've got 43 million coming from the US Army. We've got 49 million just about from the US Air Force, nearly $9 million from the US Department of Homeland Security, and 69, 70 million effectively from the Office of the US Secretary of Defense and other national security agencies. So people helping form policy for British and Scottish policing coming out of the US government and the arms industry, essentially.
Well, isn't the policy that's coming through the through NATO and the European Union at the moment is to merge military and civilian policing? So it would seem reasonable that military money is being used to decide what police policy is going to be.
I think you're on the button there. Let's just put this little insert in. It says about the RAND Corporation is a research organisation that develops solutions to public policy challenges to help make communities throughout the world safer and more secure, healthier and more prosperous. RAND is non-profit, non-partisan and committed to the public interest. So the fact it takes hundreds of millions of dollars from the US government and defence sector, it's non-partisan, Mike. Mm. Good. Well, I'm glad we understand that.
Independent, no doubt.
Independent. Well, there we are. If anybody shares our concerns with how policing is going both north of the border and in England and Wales, please do some research into some of the things we've covered today, and we'd certainly like to know your findings. We'll end on the note of, can we do something to stop Britain going into another full war in Syria, possibly with the Russians? I think that comes down to each and every one of us to get writing those letters, picking up the telephone, sending those emails to your MPs. They're getting the mindfulness. Perhaps they need more pressure to help them actually get a real life and understand the dangers of what they're doing. Thanks for joining us. We will be back on Wednesday. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.